I think a majority of Gen Z still is not has not adopted Bitcoin or is really that interested. But for those who are interested in Bitcoin, like people like myself, I think we see that it provides not only a hedge against inflation, but it preserves your purchasing power. Right now, our purchasing power is being completely eroded every single day. The money is being debased. It's fake money. For all I know, the US dollar is monopoly money. It's not really backed by anything. The debt is spiraling out of control. And we continue to fund wars. We continue to fund things we can't afford. And so I think seeing the way that money can just get printed and, you know, a small group of very powerful people can just decide whatever they want for the economy. And the rest of us get just completely, we just get left behind, right? And so I think seeing that Bitcoin is scarce, there is a 21 million cap, it's completely decentralized. Nobody controls it. Not a government, not a central bank, nobody, no ruler. Seeing that and seeing that I can be fully in control of my own money and my own wealth and preserve my purchasing power, I think that's what is the strongest signal for people, for Gen Z Bitcoiners.
Hello guys, welcome once again to BitConner podcast. We have been covering a lot of things, the past couple episodes. We have made two episodes with our new partners that are from Bull Bitcoin. The guys are crazy, but one of the things that I love about them is that they are very unapologetic and they talk straightforward on anything. So yeah, last episode we talked a little bit about Sweetcoiners, but also the problems in Europe. And we compare a little bit also with El Salvador and what's going on in Latin America in general. I hope that you enjoyed. So yeah, today we're moving on a little bit further. I know most of us in the audience are millennials, but I know in El Salvador there's Gen Z people, students, and even great developers or new developers that are starting to learn about Bitcoin, like in Torgos Dev, but also in the great public school and the great efforts of No Nation. So my idea today is to bring someone that is from Gen Z. She's a little bit younger than me. I'm old, guys. I know that I am part of that, but I'm old. So yeah, the idea is that you, Gen Z, and all kids and all the new adults can relate to Bitcoin. And we'll see how different, how actually very similar is our approach on that. So anyways, I don't want to make this any longer. I want to welcome to Halston Valencia to the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, I know. Thank you very much for being here. So I always like to start a podcast if you can share a little bit about your background. It depends if you want to share a little bit about your previous fiat background or your Bitcoin rabbit hole. It's on you. But yeah. Let's start on that, if you can share a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, of course. So yeah, as you said, as Juan said, everybody, I'm 23 years old, so a part of Gen Z. I just graduated from college earlier this year, and I got into Bitcoin during my, I just finished my master's, but during my undergraduate program, during my senior year, I read the book Broken Money by Lynn Alden, and That was kind of my first introduction to Bitcoin. But also just my first introduction to how broken the financial system was. I always felt the pain, the brokenness of the system, but it didn't really click for me until I read that book. And so I read that book for the first time, and throughout my first time reading it, I really focused on just the brokenness of it all. And then I read it again for the second time. And the second time I was more intrigued by Bitcoin as a solution. And so that's how I kind of got into Bitcoin. I read this book, and then I read Seyfedin's books, and then I started listening to a lot of podcasts, kind of like this one. I just have been on this rabbit hole of learning ever since, and this was about almost 2 years ago.
Wow,
and now I work in the Bitcoin space.
That's super awesome, and we're also going to discuss about that, why you chose to work on Bitcoin. I'm really curious, and that's really interesting. You know, I think most of us started either off with Max Kaiser or with Seyfedin's book. Mm-hmm. But it's super cool that you started with Lynn. She has a great book. That Broken Money is a great book. It's a really great book. Actually, that's the one that made me also read The Big Print from Lawrence Lepper.
Yes.
I think it's a great complementary to that. Both made such a great read. And while you were reading that book, I'm really curious, like, what was your reaction like? You mentioned a little bit about that, but what was your instant conviction, or what was your moment that something was broken in our system?
Yeah, I think really just recognizing, and, you know, this came from outside of the book too, but just recognizing that we just print money out of nothing. Recognizing that when we left the gold standard in 1971 and, you know, in America, everything just went to, everything has been declining ever since. The food is bad. The food is broken. The money is broken. Debt has gotten completely out of control. And I think just learning about that, learning about Bretton Woods, learning about the creation of the Fed, all of that just really played into the conviction that I was starting to develop back in the day when I read it for the first time. Because these are things that are not really discussed too thoroughly in school. You know, you learn about the creation of the Fed, but it's a completely different narrative. When I was in college and I was studying business economics, when they would teach about the Federal Reserve and about central banks, they would talk about it in a positive light. And I think studying Bitcoin, the Bitcoin community would feel otherwise, feel like this is not a positive thing. This was not good. And most of my economics professors believe that inflation should stay at anywhere between 2 to 3%, about 2.5%. And I think studying Bitcoin, like, you learn other ideas, like, why do we even have, why is that the threshold, the target for inflation? And so, yeah, I think it was just a culmination of, you know, reading Broken Money, learning about the Fed, learning about how we just print money, and it's not backed by anything. And so, yeah, I think it was just a combination of things that ultimately led me to that point and wanting to learn more through podcasts and more books.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious about something. I study engineering and I have seen a little bit of economics, the history of economics. Do you also learn something besides the... Because the thing is that we never learn about Austrian economics. At least I didn't learn about it. So they normally teach you about Keynesians. So is that your case? Like, they focus on that, on how that system worked, but never told you that there was another types of economy?
Yes. That was my exact experience too. Yeah, definitely. Austrian economics were not prominent in my undergraduate studies, not even my graduate studies. So yeah, I relate to that. And it was kind of just, there was one narrative and we were trained not to question it. It was just, this is how it's always been. This is how it's going to be. This is what's healthy for the economy. And so, I had the same experience.
And now that you have learned more about Austrian economics, have you ever thought, like, or at least to, you know, to have a deep talk about why they don't teach us those things? Because for me, it was like incredible that at least to have, you know, like options to know that the types of economic that exist or existed, not just Austrian or Keynesian, there's more, right? But the importance to know those and to have the, let's say, the choice to pick which one do you want to live in, right?
Yeah.
In the end.
Yeah, I think it's by deliberate design, right? I think that this is intentional because when you think about universities in America, you know, my school had my graduate program, USC, I think they have about 40,000 students. So let's just say 10,000 graduate every year. That's just one university. So thousands of students across the US are graduating every year and they're training them to go into the corporate life in the corporate cubicle. And so if you were to give students options, then they're not really learning how to, then they would be learning how to think more critically. Whereas if, you know, it's just one type of curriculum, one type of economics, one option, you produce compliant employees. And I think that's exactly what they want. They don't want people to defy the system. And I think that's the beauty of studying Bitcoin is you learn to question everything and question the system, question the incentives behind everything.
Yeah. And let's be honest, I don't know if in your generation, but in my generation, my parents, and I think most of our parents told us, like, you know, the old path, like, save money, invest in stocks, avoid real estate. So do you think that advice actually really works on Gen Z or not anymore?
Yeah, for Gen Z, I think no. I don't think that's good advice anymore. You know, historically, real estate Yeah, I mean, I think historically real estate has been a hedge against inflation, but today it's inflated by like artificially low interest rates and massive credit expansion that like it's just no longer a good means of saving. And personally, I think that houses should be for people to live in and not as a means of, not like as an investment vehicle. And I think for Gen Z, you know, it's tough. I'm 23. I have student loans. My partner has student loans. If we wanted to buy a house together, it would be very difficult. You know, wages no longer keep up with inflation and we're, you know, victims of negative real rates. And so when, you know, it comes to real estate, it's, well, not only can we not use it as a hedge against inflation, we can't even buy a house to live in, period. And so, yeah, I don't think real estate is a good means of storing your wealth. You know, when it comes to stocks, you know, Powell can get up there in Jackson Hole and say something. I saw a tweet by Preston Pish that was like, some old guy can mutter 15 words and the markets just like fall apart. And it's like, imagine placing your wealth in something that's so volatile like that, where if, you know, the Fed chair gets up and says something, all of your wealth could be wiped out. And so, yeah, I don't think stocks are a great way to save either. And, you know, when it comes to bonds, well, I think that the, you know, real yields after inflation are negative. And so I don't think that's a wise approach either. I truly think Bitcoin is the best. I mean, maybe gold, but Bitcoin, I truly think is the best. It's scarce. It's decentralized and you're in control of your own money.
Yeah. One question. I'm just curious about this because I just remind, and on the last episode, we were discussing with Jaeger about suit coiners. And that was really interesting that we discussed about that, but also about the new Bitcoin companies that, you know, that the ones that buy Bitcoin in their, or the put Bitcoin in the treasuries. Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you have an opinion on that or just out of curiosity about that?
Sure. I think, okay. What I'll say is I think the purest form of Bitcoin is by purchasing Bitcoin and self-custodying in cold storage. I want to be abundantly clear. I think that's the only way that you truly hold Bitcoin. If you hold Bitcoin on an exchange, it's not really your Bitcoin. And I think that's kind of the fallacy with a lot of these treasury companies is I just don't know if they're actually custodying their own Bitcoin. And if they're not, then are their investors actually getting Bitcoin exposure? I'm not sure. I couldn't tell you. But I think institutional adoption is crucial to mass Bitcoin adoption because it's a signal to people that Bitcoin is different from the rest of these altcoins, from the rest of these crap coins, if you will. And so, you know, I'm happy to see more people become intrigued with Bitcoin because of companies like Strategy and other treasury companies. However, I do think that there is a paper Bitcoin epidemic and I'm scared for those people who have placed a lot of their wealth in these companies instead of just buying Bitcoin. I think people should just buy Bitcoin. And so those are my thoughts on that.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, it's really interesting because that's actually the thing that we were discussing with today. That is good in a way that you just mentioned that it's crucial to mass adoption. And it, of course, will help Bitcoin. But just because a company have Bitcoin in their treasury doesn't mean that instantly they're going to be valuable. If you cannot provide value, it's the same thing. You're going to collapse either way. So, So be careful, guys, about you investing.
Yeah, be careful. Just research. Buy Bitcoin.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah. And my other question is that, so we were discussing about Gen Z, but also with millennials. Oh, and one thing that I want to point out is that we had the same thing. I think us millennials had that. A generation is really interesting, you know, because we were like finding our own path with the advice of our parents. But in the middle of our way, we find out that actually that those advices were actually gone or not working anymore because we were actually facing all the inflations and all the collapses and all the new bubbles that were happening, right? So we were like, why is it not working for us anymore?
Right.
That was the path. So we need to find out in the hard way. So. So that led me to my other question what do you think that Gen Z sees in Bitcoin that probably older generation might be missing?
Yeah, I mean, I think, let's be honest, I think a majority of Gen Z still is not has not adopted Bitcoin or is really that interested. But for those who are interested in Bitcoin, like people like myself, I think we see that it provides not only a hedge against inflation, but it preserves your purchasing power. Right now, our purchasing power is being completely eroded every single day. The money is being debased. It's fake money. For all I know, the US dollar is monopoly money. It's not really backed by anything. The debt is spiraling out of control. And we continue to fund wars. We continue to fund things we can't afford. And so I think seeing the way that money can just get printed and, you know, a small group of very powerful people can just decide whatever they want for the economy. And the rest of us get just completely, we just get left behind, right? And so I think seeing that Bitcoin is scarce, there's a 21 million cap. It's completely decentralized. Nobody controls it. Not a government, not a central bank, nobody, no ruler. Seeing that and seeing that I can be fully in control of my own money and my own wealth and preserve my purchasing power, I think that's what is the strongest signal for people, for Gen Z Bitcoiners. Seeing those differences, like, you know, you guys, the millennials, I also have a lot of sympathy for you guys because you guys grew up with the 2008 financial crisis. You guys also had to endure, you know, COVID and all the inflation, and, you know, buying a home is pretty difficult for you guys as well. And so I think that there's a lot of parallels there between the generations. But yeah, I think that those are just some of the differences that we see as millennials and Gen Zers, you know, with Bitcoin compared to altcoins and the US dollar.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just thinking right now that a lot of people in, at least in El Salvador, see the podcast. Some of them are students, some of them are becoming developers, some might graduate from this great project that it's called Node Nation, and they're looking their path into Bitcoin, right?
So, I love that. So,
yeah, so for all these people, you know, that are learning about that, but also people that are discovering just the podcast for the first time, and I don't know, that are drowning into student debt, as you mentioned, because that's common in your generation and mine, or rent, and also inflation. What will you tell them? Why did you chose Bitcoin?
Cuando dejas tus activos digitales en un exchange o en custodia de alguien más, te expones a riesgos de terceros no deseados. A diferencia del sistema bancario tradicional, Bitcoin te permite tomar el control total de tus fondos utilizando tus propias claves privadas. Esto te permite ser soberano y esencialmente tu propio banco. Al tomar el control de tus Bitcoin, puedes evitar riesgos innecesarios de terceros. Almacenar tus Bitcoin en custodia de terceros como los exchanges puede exponerte a ataques de actores malintencionados, gobiernos o estafadores que lo único que quieren es apoderarse de tu dinero. Las billeteras de hardware aumentan la seguridad de tu billetera porque tus claves privadas se almacenan en un dispositivo especializado que no está siempre conectado al internet. Como te he dicho antes, mantener tus claves almacenadas en un dispositivo en línea puede exponerte a factores adicionales de ataque, por lo que se recomienda usar una billetera de hardware al almacenar grandes cantidades de Bitcoin durante largos periodos de tiempo. Jade es una billetera de hardware no custodial para bitcoins y Liquid que ofrece opciones de firma simple y firmas múltiples. Yo personalmente lo utilizo para almacenar mis bitcoins, ya que me siento mucho más seguro manteniendo mis bitcoins en una billetera fría que en una almacenada, por ejemplo, en mi teléfono. Si estás pensando en adquirir uno para ti, no olvides utilizar el código de descuento de nuestro show, BitCorner Podcast. De esta forma estarás apoyando directamente el show y además obtendrás un 10% de descuento para la compra de tu billetera free.
Yeah, I chose Bitcoin for all of the reasons I mentioned previously. It's decentralized. I'm in control of my own money. You know, the next generation, even, you know, someone like myself, I don't have to have a bank. I can just be my own bank. And I think that's beautiful. And I think that's why I chose Bitcoin. I don't like placing my future wealth in the hands of people, of very powerful people, who can just with the snap of a button change everything, and the rest of us just get completely left behind. We can't afford a house. If I would have started buying Bitcoin when back in the day, say when I was a small child, like I would be so set right now. My purchasing power would be preserved, and you know, maybe I could afford a home. Maybe things would be very different. And so that's why I chose Bitcoin, and that's why I stack stats every day. And you know, over time, I think it'll be worth it. Right now, I think a lot of my generation is just trying to stop treading water, because that's definitely what it feels like right now. It's like we're just surviving. You know, I saw a statistic the other day that said Gen Zers spend 51% of their paycheck on rent. And that's pretty accurate for me as well. You know, rent has just skyrocketed. Salaries aren't keeping up. And, you know, we're a victim of negative real rates. And so that's why I'm choosing Bitcoin.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that statistic is correct in all parts of the world. So I think it's accurate that half of your income goes to renting. It's incredible how that changed. How that changed with previous years. Another, just out of curiosity, do you speak with your friends, your closest circle, about Bitcoin when you go out?
I do. It's definitely something that I'm passionate about. And I think, you know, more than Bitcoin, I'm really passionate about educating people on the flaws in our broken system and the flaws in our economy. And so I think it starts there. Usually that's where the conversation starts. And you'd be surprised like how many people just aren't aware. And I think that's just because college doesn't do a good job of teaching this and exposing the system. It's not convenient. And so, yeah, I definitely chat about Bitcoin with my friends. And here in Austin, it's, you know, Bitcoin City. So lots of people are open-minded when it comes to Bitcoin. But yeah, I have some friends that think I'm crazy and I'm like a loony. And some friends have, you know, have been orange-pilled. And so definitely something I like talking about.
But I feel related, because when I go out to friends, well, I think by now all my friends know that I have the podcast and I talk 100% about Bitcoin. But I remember that the first time they were asking me, like, but why not just buy stocks, or why do you buy instead or ETF, right? So interesting that these options are like, they don't question about that.
Yeah.
But when you talk about a superior form of money, it's like they question everything. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think it is interesting. And here, I'll pull up this graphic I saw the other day. It was, in the past 5 years, Bitcoin is 100%. So, you know, you just show them Bitcoin's CAGR. In the last 5 years, the CAGR has surpassed 60% compared to U.S. bonds, commodities, equities, gold, hedge funds. Now, that's usually what I tell them, is like, let's just look at Bitcoin's CAGR and let's compare those stocks, bonds, and Bitcoin, and even gold. And I think usually that sparks something in them, and they're like, oh, wow, didn't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the key is, like, for example, I think like a couple of weeks ago, I met friends of other friends. And, you know, when you have deep talks during the night, something led to Bitcoin, always led to Bitcoin from my end. But I think a good way is something related to what you just mentioned, that to talk about it is something that people actually feel, right? And not just like something they need to learn. I think if they feel something related with, for example, I had a friend that she told me something that she likes she doesn't like how schools actually work, you know, the public system and everything, that says that if she ever had a child, she wants to have like homeschooling or war schooling. And I tell her, you're a Bitcoiner and you just don't know that. And she told me, but I thought Bitcoin was just about money. I was like, no, there's different rabbit holes inside of Bitcoin.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah. So are you working on orange pilling her?
Yes. It's a work in progress.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For but sure. In the end, what I'm trying to say is that if you are also guys trying to orange pill someone, just do it with something that they actually feel related on that, because they will feel that. Not something as a need, but something related to that, and they will be curious about learning more about Bitcoin, because we have a lot of rabbit holes, and it's just not about money. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of values inside Bitcoin. Yeah.
There are, for sure.
Yeah. I think it's a good time. Oh, let me check. Yeah, I think it's a good time to make the game, and then we can continue on the podcast. So, guys, as you already know, the game is that my previous guests have a question for my next guest. So now it's Halston time.
My question for you is, if you had to go on holidays for 2 weeks with a Bitcoin influencer or someone known in the Bitcoin sphere, who would it be and what would you do? Ciao.
Wow. Okay. So go on vacation for 2 weeks with a Bitcoin influencer,
once.
And what would we do and where would we go?
Yes. Or we discuss.
Okay. Let's see. Okay.
You can take your time.
Yeah, let's see. Okay, I would probably... So, I don't know if you know Isa Santos from BTC East.
Ah, yeah, of course.
Yeah,
hey, Isa,
I've never met her, but...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I haven't met her yet, but hopefully I'll meet her soon. I would probably go to BTC Isla, and I would stay with her for 2 weeks. And I think she's super cool, super fun. And I would love to just see how she's doing everything there, see the cafe, and have a good time.
That's actually a really good answer. And Isabel is awesome. She's a friend of mine, and what she's doing, it's incredible. Isla Mujer. I think it's a great destination. You picked really well.
Yeah, and I've never been there, so I think that would be amazing.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. As a young woman in Bitcoin, do you feel that Gen Z women are approaching money different than the past generations? And also, if there's more opportunity in the Bitcoin space than in the fiat space?
For women specifically?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think women are definitely approaching money a lot differently than previous generations. I know, you know, I have been fortunate enough to attend college, but I'm a first generation college student. My parents didn't go to college. And so I feel that there's a lot more equality now in education where men and women are being taught the same things. Whereas I think back in the day, like take my parents' generation, my grandparents' generation, they were more ignorant to money and financial education. And so I do think that this generation and women are approaching money differently. I also would agree that there are more opportunities for women in the Bitcoin space than in the fiat space. You know, when I was in college studying business economics, I minored in marketing and finance. And so I was really interested in the intersection of traditional financial banking and financial technologies like fintech. I was really intrigued by that. And I really, really, really wanted to work at like Robinhood. This was before I discovered Bitcoin. So
yeah.
To the viewers watching, don't judge. But I really wanted to work at like Robinhood or, you know, a company similar to that one. And it was pretty difficult. It was dominated by males and men. So not to say that it's impossible, but I think even like take something like investment banking, private equity, like it's a very male dominated space. And so I think in Bitcoin, It's open to everybody. Bitcoin is for everybody. As long as you understand Bitcoin, understand the principles, understand the responsibility and the ethos behind it, then you can do whatever you want in this space. And I think that is so beautiful. And yeah, I just love working in this space.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you. That's something that I feel related to. That's why I ask you that in the fiat system, I think there's less opportunities or male dominated, but I feel Bitcoin is more open and then you have more opportunities. And so it's a great start, I think, because we are too early. So it's a really good start. But you also have been mentioning a couple of times that you have been studying, that you studied business as economics. So this is a really interesting question that I always ask for people that have a very specific career. In my case, it was engineering. But if you could redesign, like, let's say in this case, financial education for schools today, what would be the first thing that you will change?
If I could change something in the education system?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think kind of like what we touched on earlier, I would add Austrian economics to the curriculum as an option. I think that's one of the biggest flaws in the traditional academic system in the US, at least. I can't speak on other countries, but in the US, I think that's one of the biggest flaws is that it's just one ideology. And if you disagree, you are in the wrong automatically. And you're not encouraged to ask questions. You're not encouraged to think independently. And I think that's destructive to a society. And so that's the first thing I would change is I would add Austrian economics, and I would also encourage students to think more critically about things and encourage discussion and encourage that like kind of dialogue. And I know some schools maybe outside of the ones I attended are like this, but just in my experience, it was you know, questioning the system was discouraged. And so that's what I would change.
Absolutely. No, and I agree, because what I was thinking is that I was discussing with someone that I remember the name, but anyways, doesn't matter, that told me like, but why do you study it? Like, I was talking about the big print, I remember, and told me like, but why are you studying so much the history of the US and all that happened in terms of economy, all the bubbles and everything? And I told, you know, to understand our economy in general, in El Salvador, also in Europe, which I'm based at right now, you need to understand also the history of the US, because in the end, all the fiat currencies are based in the dollar, and in the end, the dollars are backed by nothing.
Right. You know? I know. It's so crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. So in the end, to understand that, to understand the problem, to understand what is going on, you need to understand the problem, and to understand the problem, you go to the origins, and that's.
So that's
one thing that is really interesting. And I think that's also one thing that did a really great job, Lawrence, with the big print, but also with Broken Money. It was a really good, both were really good books doing that. But anyways, we're going to start wrapping up. But I have a really interesting question, and it's like, was like working with Adam. You know that something happened to me that you don't know Isabella. I know Isabella and Julian, but I don't know in person Adam. And I know that they are all the three of them.
They all could work together. Yeah.
Yes. So what's like working with Adam and Bitcoin?
Oh, it's phenomenal. I love Adam and I love his family. It's been such a blessing to work for him, and I work independently for him, and so I have the pleasure of helping with, well, not always, but sometimes we'll ideate things for the Bitcoin well. Sometimes it'll be things for GetBased. Sometimes it's things for his personal brand. So it's a nice little diverse mixture of tasks that I got on a weekly basis. And so, yeah, he's super ambitious and really wants to help the next generation reclaim their freedom. That's his mission, his life's mission. And so that starts with him as a dad to his kids, but also, you know, he's a mentor to me, as well as to all the Gen Z followers that he has. And I don't know if you know, but we just started a podcast called The Adam O'Brien Show. And so we've been putting out weekly episodes. And yeah, it's just been so amazing to learn from him and to see how motivated he is to really help the next generation break this cycle and to opt out of the broken system that we're in.
Absolutely. And what exactly do you do, if you can share? And
for the show, I produce the show. So I do everything from the topics to the macro research, provide like just all of the assets that he would need to do the show. And then we do the show live. So for all of you guys watching, it's every Thursday, 6 p.m. Eastern time. So I kind of help like just run the show as like an executive producer. So do that. And then throughout the week, we'll do kind of just top of funnel things like for Bitcoin Well. And then for GetBased, we're working on a new show that's going to come out in a couple months. And so I help with like the kind of just like the script ideas and topics, things that I think would be beneficial for the next generation. But yeah, my official role is I'm a marketing strategist.
Okay, that's cool. That's awesome. Yeah. And also, it's really fun. I mean, all that work that you mentioned, it's really fun. I love that. That's why I also have this show. I don't consider that a part of an actual job, you know. It's something that I enjoy. And I had the pleasure to earn money just to doing something that I actually love.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know, my two last question is, what's next for you? What's, now that you're in the Bitcoin space, have you ever thought what's going to be your path or what you're going to study or more in Bitcoin related, I think. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I think my path, every day I wake up and I just continue learning. It's my favorite thing to do ever, whether it be about Bitcoin or just about financial markets or precious metals, whatever it may be, I love learning. And what's next for me? I think I am, you know, going to continue working with Adam, Bitcoin Well, GetBased for hopefully the coming years, and love to grow in that space. I'll be traveling a little bit for conferences. I'll be in New York next week and then DC after that. So just really hoping to grow in this space and make my voice heard and be an inspiration to my generation, who I think is a majority of my generation is experiencing the pain, but they're a bit ignorant to what's going on. And so I'm hoping to bridge that gap.
And not that actually having a podcast or being an executive producer, it's a good excuse to learn more because you actually have guests. And actually, you need to do the research. So it's a continued learning. It's the best way to do it. Yeah. Exactly. So congratulations on that. And keep doing it. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. And likewise to you, I think this is awesome that you're doing this, especially in El Salvador. And I would love to visit. I've never been to El Salvador, but would love to see your beautiful country someday. But yeah, keep it up.
Yeah, you're more than welcome to come to El Salvador and explore it. And, it's amazing. So yeah, my last question is, if you could send one message to any 20-year-old that are listening to this or watching it out there about Bitcoin, what will it be?
Yeah, my biggest piece of advice is to never stop learning and develop an obsession for curiosity. Because I think when you are insanely curious about everything, you learn to think a bit more critically and question the incentives. And I think that's the biggest lesson I learned studying Bitcoin, is just to always question the incentives behind things.
All right. Yeah. Halston, thank you very much for your time, for stopping by on the podcast. It was amazing.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So guys, stay tuned for the next episode. We're continued. We're almost at the end of the season 4, but we will be back probably in November. We'll still be in October running. So yeah, I hope that you enjoy and see you next week. Ciao.
Bye.